listening to Cinema Jaw, recorded on location at the Original Mothers in Chicago. With me is
Rye, the movie guy.
My name is Matt Kay. Let's lay it down this week, Rye.
Let's lay it down. I like the way that sounds. Going over this week, of course, we're going to do Eye for an Eye, Interest or Ignore, on some new movies coming out at the theater. We'll also have a couple reviews of movies at the theater, as I was able to get out there a couple of times. Instead of doing a top 10 list, we have decided to do sort of a questionnaire. We're looking at, A, questions that we've written down to ask each other.
We're interviewing one another.
Right. And also a couple fan emails that we have that...
Sweet. We have fans?
Fans.
Wow.
That are interested in learning more about us, Matt.
I'm excited to hear what they have to say.
So am I. Also, we'll be doing 6 Degrees of Separation with Matt Kay, the guru of 6 Degrees. Some DVD reviews, and we'll finish up with Rye's Hidden Gem.
Sounds like a full itinerary.
Yes, indeed it is. So we start off with Eye for an Eye. Interested or ignore, Matt? That's the question. Interested or ignore?
So are we going to go see this movie, or are we going to skip it?
Exactly.
All right.
First up this week is Amelia. Hilary Swank in a look at the life of legendary American pilot Amelia Earhart. Matt, interested or ignore?
We're just going off that?
Just that. I mean, because I think you know the idea of Amelia Earhart. At least we know that she was swallowed by the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah. I liked Hilary Swank, and I find the story interesting. Interested.
I'm interested as well. I like Hilary Swank. I think a very fine actress.
She is.
Especially in the right role.
Yeah.
And from the trailers that I've seen and the pictures, very fits the character rather well. She's got really short hair. Always comes across, anyways, what I imagined of Amelia Earhart that I learned in history books or saw photos of.
Yeah, I don't know too much about the historical figure Amelia Earhart.
And either do I, and I think that's what's interesting for me is all I know is that she attempted to fly around the world and didn't make it.
Yeah, you know, it kind of reminds me of The Aviator, who's I didn't know too much about Howard Hughes.
Right.
Either before I watched that movie and I was fascinated, so this is another biopic.
You hit it right on the head. I did not know that much about Howard Hughes either, and was very interesting character.
Extremely interesting character.
And so I think that's what we have here also. I think we all know the main story of why she's known, but we don't really know the person. I think the film will be sort of fascinating.
Because she was quite famous before she crashed a plane or whatever happened. She was a big American icon, although, you know, like I said and you said, we're not too familiar with the character. We're interested because we want to learn.
Exactly. So we are both interested on Amelia. Next is a vampire movie. It's called...
Another one, huh?
Oh, man, are they coming out in slews, aren't they?
Yeah, ever since Twilight, I think vampires are the new teen hit movie, you know?
Yeah, I agree. There's probably a vampire in Amelia for all we know. All right, this one is called Cirque de Freak, The Vampire Assistant.
That sounds like a class act movie right
there. Cirque de Freak, The Vampire Assistant. A young boy meets a vampire at a freak show. The vampire is John C. Reilly. The boy must go on the road and become a vampire. Matt, interested or ignore?
Well, okay, so John C. Reilly's in this. Is this a comedy?
It is one of these comedy slash action movies. From what I can tell in the trailer, it looks sort of funny that he's a vampire, but at the same time, there's evil vampires and werewolves in the movie trying to kill the boy that he is protecting.
Have you ever seen a movie called Transylvania 65000?
I have, indeed.
Did you like it?
No.
No, one of the early performances from Kramer.
Yeah.
And he Michael Richards?
Michael Richards.
Yeah.
And he was funny in the role. He was good.
That was probably the best part of the
movie.
Yeah,
for sure. And that's actually probably the reason I watched it. I saw it way later in life. It came out, I believe, in the 80s, I want to say.
A long time ago. I saw it pretty close to its release, actually.
Yeah.
No, I'm not interested terribly in this. Although I like John C. Reilly, it just seems a little corny.
Yeah, I also am giving it an ignore because it just seems like everybody's trying to cash in on the vampire craze right now.
Yeah.
And it's just another one of these, oh, it's a vampire action slash comedy movie that, to tell you the truth, I can do without.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
Our third movie, we got four, we're going over here. Our third movie has no, how would I say this, has no description. All it is a title. Okay. Saw 6.
Oh, that's all you need.
Exactly. Interested or ignore Saw 6.
Interested. I liked them all so far. They have ebbs and flows, peaks and valleys. I actually prefer Saw 2 to the original. I like the Saw mythos. I'm a horror fan. I'm interested.
I'm going to give this one ignore. I've ignored all the Saws after number 2. I'd rather saw my finger off than keep sitting through the same idea of torture, horror film that seems very repetitive to me.
Yeah, well,
I'm giving it an ignore.
I'll let you know what I think of it.
All right. The last one is a small movie, but it's starting to get more and more recognition. It's, I guess you can say, an art house film called An Education. A coming-of-age story about a teenage girl in 1960 suburban London and how her life changes with the arrival of a playboy nearly twice her age. The playboy is played by Peter Sarsgaard, and this is newcomer Carey Mulligan, who is starting to get Academy Award buzz going around her performance in this movie.
Wow.
Interested or ignore?
I'm going to give this a qualified interested. My qualification is that I need to learn a little bit more about this. It's very intriguing.
Yeah, this movie was playing at the Chicago International Film Festival, which is still going on as we speak. I believe we have 2 more days of the festival. And I actually tried to go see it, and it was sold out.
Wow.
And
so that says something.
Yeah, and they were not doing any rush tickets or anything, so I still have not seen the film. I believe it opens up this weekend here in Chicago. I'm interested mainly from just what I've read and little that I've seen trailers and seen online. It looks like a very interesting and very deep type of drama.
Yeah. Well, that does sound interesting.
Yeah. So those are the new movies coming out this week, this last week, and I was able to get out to the theater a couple of times.
Before we do that, I want to go off script just a little bit.
Yeah, please.
What do you think about this Paranormal Activity movie?
Oh, let's do discuss. Shot for about $11,000, I hear, in a guy's apartment.
Yeah.
They do a lot of night vision, looking at a couple sleeping because they believe they're getting visited by
spirits or ghosts or demons or something.
And I guess we had touched on our horror film episode about Blair Witch Project and how great the marketing was.
Yes.
And it seems they've sort of captured that same type of spirit with this film. They
to
originally
degree.
Rolled it out for midnight screenings only.
Right, and now they're like, demand it.
Yeah, now they're saying demand it. And if you demand it, it'll open up in your city. And it is just climbing up the top 10 chart. It made like $7 million its first week and something like $17 million this week. Very exciting buzz around the film. I'm a little interested. But maybe you got to see it at midnight and with all the hype for it to maybe have a payoff. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go see that. I had to throw it in there. I was really curious as to your opinions there.
Yeah, it does look interesting. I'll definitely say that.
Before we get into the meat of the show here, let's pause really briefly, and we'll come right back.
You bet, Matt. We are back at the original Mothers on Division Street. You're listening to Cinema Jaw. We just got done discussing the new films opening up in the theater this weekend. Now let's take a look back at some of the new movies that just opened last weekend. I was able to get out there 2 times this week.
Sweet. What'd you see?
The first was Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, I really want to see that, man.
I was hoping you had a chance to see it.
Yeah, I really want to. My kid is almost 2, so it's still tough to get out there with him, you know?
Yeah. This film, I loved the movie. I can see the movie being very polarizing because some people are going to find that it doesn't have enough plot for them. It's not necessarily a story about plot.
Well, we talked about this, I think it was last week.
Yeah.
And the book is only a few sentences long.
Yeah, it is less than 350 words,
and
the
yet,
entire book.
And yet it's a classic.
Right.
A beloved classic.
Right. And I'm happy to report that Spike Jonze, the director of the movie, did an excellent job staying true to the spirit of the book. He just expanded the adventure of the story. It sort of seems like just that. Like it just... The book just got that much bigger. He didn't change it in any way. It stays very true to the spirit of the book.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I was worried.
Yeah, that was really good. Also, the kid who plays Max in the movie. His name is actually Max Records, is the actor.
That's a pretty cool name.
Very cool name, Max Records. Wonderful job playing Max in the movie. And what I've realized when I was watching him was...
That's the wife.
Go on. You want to take another break here, or...
I got it. Yeah.
Okay. Let's take one more break.
Funny story, Rye. We're back at Cinema Jaw. That was my wife calling me.
Right in the middle of the podcast.
Yes.
It must have been something important.
It must have been something important.
I don't want to ask. I don't want to pry, but I'm sort of curious.
She texted me to call her.
Okay.
And
everything's okay?
No, everything's fine, because I was a little concerned. Maybe it wasn't. Gallon of milk.
A gallon of milk.
Yeah.
Interrupted this fine podcast.
This fine podcast. The nerve.
Unbelievable.
We're back on track. I love my wife. She's the best thing to happen to a mug like me. But
yeah. Let's hope we don't get interrupted again with her saying, remember, it's 2%.
Does your girl... Yeah. Does your girl ever do that? I mean, you think, like, when she texted me, she could have just written it right there, like, hey, pick up a gallon of
milk. Got milk? You'd get the points, you know?
Yeah, I would have. Pick up some milk.
Son of a gun. All right, so where was I? I was talking about where the wild things
are. I know,
and
I'm so sorry for the interruption. It was a good monologue you had going.
Yeah, and I was commenting about Max Records, who plays Max in the movie.
Yeah, which is a great name.
Yeah, and I was saying he did an excellent job in the movie, and what I realized when I was watching his performance was how we've become, for some reason, the idea that, I should say, we think that watching a child actor act more as an adult, say, like, what's that little girl's
Dakota
name?
Fanning.
Dakota Fanning. We think that's, you know, excellent acting. But how difficult it can be for a kid to naturally act like a kid and not be annoying like little Jake Lloyd in Star Wars Episode One. Just play a kid naturally going through the emotions, and this kid just nails it.
I got to say that I think a lot of that is writing.
Yeah.
I do, because I think if you got a writer who writes kids as he thinks kids should be, like whoever wrote Star Wars Episode 4.
Mr. Lucas.
Four,
yeah.
It wasn't Lucas.
He
signs off on pages, man. He doesn't write a thing anymore. He doesn't lift a finger. That was awful. I mean, they actually made the kid... I mean, putting it in the script is one thing, but when you're on set, the cameras are rolling, and you actually force your actors to say something that just doesn't come out of a human being's mouth normally.
Yippee!
That's different. Yippee. It's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Nobody says yippee.
Nobody says
yippee. Not even on Tatooine, okay?
No. I agree.
Yeah.
So that's why I was bringing up the point that this Max Records, when you're watching this Where the Wild Things Are, you notice how naturally he plays the kid part, the emotions of how much fun it is to just go out there and destruct something when you're 8 years old, be it whatever, and how quickly you can turn into just being sort of a sourpuss, angry kid, tired. He plays it just so perfectly. He's got all elements of what you see when you're watching a, you know, 8 to 10 year old kid play, and he just nails it so naturally.
That's good. That's one of the strengths of the original piece, is that it respects children as human beings and doesn't kowtow to them or dumb it down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was astonished how well the film captured the wonderment of a child's imagination. It just nails it, you know. It just fits that whole bill of wow. You could sort of remember when you were a kid how you would sort of go on a tangent, but in some way it made sense from the real world on why you were imagining this to begin with.
I don't have to remember being a kid to remember going on a tangent. I think we do it
all the time.
Yeah, several times a night here on Cinema Jaw.
Yeah, and then lastly, I thought that the film did an excellent job not spoon-feeding you the correlation between the real world that Max lives in and the land of the wild things. It's not like, oh, you can clearly see that this particular monster represents his mother. They don't do that. It's just
there.
It's done subtly and just really just beautifully. It makes for a just beautiful film. One of the year's best, in my opinion.
Wow, I cannot wait to see this movie.
Yeah.
It's high on my list.
Yeah, definitely get out there and see Where the Wild Things Are. I also double-dipped at the theater this weekend, and on Saturday night, I caught Capitalism, A Love Story.
Sweet. We talked about this early on.
I thought the film was good in the sense that Moore brings up a lot of great points, including how the bailout vote was just rushed, hurried up, not a lot of thought, and they constantly were trying to rush it through the Congress and through the House to get it voted on. Goes into pretty good detail on that, and also about certain segments of the population, how, you know, he always skews things a little bit, but in one instance he picks on new pilots that are called regional pilots, how cheaply they are paid. Everybody, for some reason, I think when you think a pilot, you think big bucks, and he uncovers how these younger pilots are just totally taken advantage of and are paid somewhere between like $16,000 and $22,000 a year. Some of them have second jobs, and they're flying planes all
commercial?
Around. Yeah, commercial. But
that's
they're used,
scary, dude.
It is. They're used as regional airlines, so they're not doing the major flights, but they're doing smaller flights. The movie overall is not as funny as some of his past works. More, a lot of times, brings up, especially in Sicko, it's sort of that tragic comedy where you're laughing but sad at the same time. This movie was more informative than it was funny. So it was probably lacking, I guess, if anything, a little in the entertainment value category for a documentary that we've come to know from Michael Moore.
Hmm.
It was interesting, and I recommend it, but it wasn't, wow, this was tugging on every single emotion, say, like Bowling for Columbine.
Did it, which was an amazing piece.
Right.
Did it change any opinions of yours?
No, I think I went in pretty sided with Moore anyways, thinking that there is a lot that is wrong with capitalism. There's a lot that's right with it, too. He obviously focuses clearly on the negative.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I sided with what he said. I don't think I would rush out and join some activist group, you know, one way or the other now. It wasn't that, like, moving one way. But at the same point, you know, very informative, so.
Cool. It's on my list, but it's probably going to be a rental for me.
Yeah. Good film. I think definitely you should check both those out. And one thing I was thinking about when I went and saw Where the Wild Things Are was I was at the movie theater, and it's a film that is obviously made for, I would say, more or less adults, even though the book is based for kids. And I guess if there's one complaint about Where the Wild Things Are is that I think young kids really aren't going to get the movie.
Yeah.
Boo-hoo. I love the movie. But I was worried, and I always am when I go see a movie like this, of the theater experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I go in the theater, I look around, I can't sit next to a row of, you know, a guy who's got like four kids with him. There's going to be talking, and I sat in an area right next to a couple of other guys that I thought would they would respect us. And sure enough, here comes a guy with his little daughter. She's probably, if I had to ballpark her, 4-5 years old. She's not going to get the movie, you know. And there isn't really much even humor in the movie for them to get. I don't know exactly why he would bring her to the movie. It's a PG.
Yeah, but it's known as a children's story.
Right, so it's tricky. So he brings her, and they sit right in front of us. And overall, she was well-behaved, but clearly the movie just did nothing for her. She was getting up, turning around, standing up, and it could be distracting, especially when there's a key emotional part in the movie. I'm really into it, and all of a sudden this girl's like standing on her chair looking at me, and I'm like, what the heck is this, you know?
Yeah.
And it made me think, even though he did really good keeping her quiet and respectful to everybody around her, so it wasn't all that bad of a theater experience, but it got me thinking, I gotta ask Matt, what was your worst movie theater experience where you went and saw a movie that you were really interested in and it was just ruined by either people talking or something?
Aside from my extreme toothache at Zombieland a few weeks ago?
This has got to be caused by other people in the theater or the environment of the theater.
Well, it was the environment of the theater because I brought in some snacks.
Yeah.
And I was eating them, and it hurt my teeth.
What was the snack?
It was just potato chips.
Jeez.
Yeah. I had lost a filling a couple weeks ago, and I still haven't been to the dentist.
Yeah.
So a little bit of the food got kind of wedged into the gap that the filling left.
Yeah.
And I guess it hit the nerve finally, and it just like searing, shooting pain throughout my entire head.
Oh, that is...
Yeah.
Nothing you want right there.
No, not at
all. The dreaded toothache.
And you know what? Something weird. I don't know what it is about movie theaters, but for a while there, and this is kind of odd, maybe it's the pattern in the rugs, because they use casino rugs, you know?
Sure.
Whenever I would go to the movie theater, I would have panic attacks, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't know why. Like, And to some degree, I have to kind of fend that off even to this day.
Yeah.
And I'm a really laid back, easygoing guy. Like, not much gets to me. But for some reason, sometimes when I go to the theater, I get a little, I don't know, paranoid is the right word, but nervous.
Wow, that is quite strange, actually.
It's very strange. I have no idea where it comes from or why it's there, but...
Yeah.
There was this one movie that I went to in particular with my parents when I was visiting my brother after he had his first kid. It was about 2 years ago. Oh, no, wait a second. No, it's like six or seven years ago now. My nephew's that old. In any event, we were at the theater, and I just had a panic attack. This is the first time it ever happened to me. Like, out of the blue, I'm enjoying the movie, and then all of a sudden I just got extremely agitated and anxious.
Yeah.
I had to get up and leave. and I don't know why. So that was probably my worst experience. And I think we were watching, it was something good. I think it was like Meet the Parents or something. It was
yeah.
a good movie. I was into it. And then just out of the blue. You know, I've never
a switch flipped.
Yeah. I've never really had nothing memorable with other moviegoers where they annoyed the hell out of me.
I had two. One was The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise.
Okay.
I had a Chinese couple sitting behind me where the husband did not understand any English. So the wife was basically translating the entire movie, all the dialogue from English to Chinese behind me, which talking in the theater annoys the heck out of me already. But hearing someone translate everything that Tom Cruise is saying on screen to Chinese was... I mean, talk about taking you out of the movie. Now I'm just constantly listening to her like, I wonder what the, you know.
That
I wonder
sucks.
What the translation is for attack, attack. And she's yelling, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, oh, my God. So that was a terrible one. And then also Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, I saw in the theater. It was like a Wednesday night. I thought nobody would be there. And it just so happened it was a bunch of, like, high school kids. And you've seen the movie.
Yeah.
It has special effects that aren't necessarily... They're more like imaginative special effects. They're sort of like climbing on trees at the end, and the tree limbs are sort of... It's supposed to be like almost like a beautiful special effect.
Yeah, and this is
it's
grace. This is technique.
Grace, yes. It's not supposed to be
Spider-Man. Rooted in physics.
Right, and so we're sitting there, and they start laughing. And there's a group of like eight of them, and they're laughing, and they're starting to yell things at the movie because they're taking the idea of these... people on the tree limbs like to be serious. They're missing the whole point of it being like a, you know, graceful and imaginative. They're looking at it like, that could never happen, da da da, and they're yelling. Totally ruined the movie for me. Those would be, I would say, overall the two worst movie theater experiences that I've had. But I live at the movie theater. I mean, I come out on a Monday and I smell like popcorn, you know?
Yeah.
So I have a lot that I constantly remember, and I'm always looking around my surroundings, who I'm sitting next to.
I think you shower with popcorn-scented soap, don't you?
I actually know. That is just left over from the movie theater double-dipping, triple-dipping on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Let me just ask you a question. Have you ever, because we're about to get into our questionnaires.
Yeah, we are about to get into our questionnaires.
This isn't on my questionnaire. It just randomly popped into my head. And I have an idea for a segment, too.
Awesome.
We don't have to do it this week, but I had an idea. But before I get to that, have you ever bought one ticket but watched multiple movies?
Wow. It's like you read my mind. I knew you were going to go there. I don't like pirating movies, and I believe that you should pay for the artist's work,
you know,
on screen.
Hold that. Okay, go
I
ahead.
Have.
You have?
I've done it not a ton, but I've done it probably 3-4 times where I've – the best time to do it, a Chicago winter, January-ish. You get a lot of Oscar movies out, a lot of good movies out. Heck, I'll go early in the day, maybe around like 11, 12 o'clock, catch the matinee of one, and then sneak into another one. Yes, I am guilty of it.
Yeah.
Yourself?
Once.
Once?
Once. I've always thought about it, but I've never actually done it.
Yeah, it's a little bit trickier to do than...
Nah, than nobody set. Cares. They really don't care.
Not in the sense that the people don't care, because they don't. Because you could just walk around nowadays, these multiplexes, for 3-4 movies if you had the time.
Yeah.
But it's tricky lining up the movie times, because I've had to look at
they
the times
they do that on
to
purpose.
See which movies I want to see and how will it work. And then two, you don't want to pick too long of movies, because if you're double dipping like that, you can't pick two-hour movies or 2.5 hours. Then you're talking 5 hours. So you want like a 90-minute film and like, you know, hour and 45 minutes, and that's perfect.
I agree.
It is a little tricky to match up. Good question, though, Matt.
Thanks. And you want to hear my idea for the segment?
Yeah.
And then I know we're doing a lot of pauses, but let's do another quick pause for station
before
identification.
Before we get into our questionnaire.
Yes.
Okay. What's your idea for the segment?
I was thinking we would do a segment called Drinking at the Movies. We throw a thematic cocktail recipe, since we're doing this show at the Original Mothers.
Yeah.
At our audience, something real quick. This will be like a two-second segment. And I actually had an idea for one. I haven't come up with the recipe yet, but I was just thinking it would be cool to make a drink called the Dr. Manhattan.
Nice.
And make it blue.
Gotcha.
You know?
Yeah, not
and
bad.
I was thinking something with Jaeger and blue curacao in it, and maybe some Malibu rum and then some pineapple juice or something.
And this
probably
is obviously
the
in celebration
right
of The Watchmen.
Exactly. So yeah. If we're going to see a movie, we have to come up with, like, the wild thing, you know, for where the wild things are. And then we would say a quick, like, one part this, one part that, and give somebody a cocktail recipe. And then they can make that drink and sneak it into the theater and then maybe write in and tell us what they thought of our recipe.
Not a bad idea.
Because we know a little bit about mixology here at Cinema Jaw.
We do. Right now we are drinking PBRs, sort of our drink of choice at Cinema Jaw.
It is, which does not speak volumes about our mixology skills, Rye.
No. So we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we got some questions to answer. I'll be asking Matt some questions, he'll be asking me some questions, and hopefully some fun will ensue.
Yes, getting to know you.
Woohoo!
I will never sing again on this show.
We'll be right back.
All right, we're back at Cinema Jaw. Thank you for bearing with our weak bladders, although for you, breaks do not take any time whatsoever.
The power of editing.
The power of editing. So what are we getting into here, Rye?
Right, and we're going away from the top 10 list that's been the meat of the show, and instead we are going to focus on a little bit of a questionnaire.
We're trying something new.
Yeah, we are going to ask each other questions and get to know each other a little bit more.
By the way,
on the podcast.
Before the break, I sang a little song.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what movie was that from?
I cannot. I can't remember the song that you sang.
Getting to Know You.
No.
The King and I.
Good film.
Yeah, good film. Okay.
Yeah.
So why don't we dive right in here?
Okay, we'll start off. Here's one that was written into us from Jason Pruitt. Jason Pruitt from Hickory Hills. Jason Pruitt from Hickory Hills had asked us, "Hey guys, is there a movie that you feel deserves a second look? As in, you might have saw it once, didn't like it, but the second time you watched it, you were like, wow, did I get this wrong?" Matt, I'll let you answer that one first. A movie that maybe you watched it the first time, didn't do it justice. The second time you saw it was like, wow, this is a really good movie. You know, actually, I have one
I
just thought of.
Go ahead.
For me, one that I saw in the theater that was okay at best. Then when I saw it at home, and now I've seen it about 3-4 more times, is Vanilla Sky.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I love that movie.
Tom Cruise, Cameron Crowe directed, and I remember seeing it in the theater and thinking, it's one of these.
Cameron Diaz, Penelope Cruz.
Yeah. And I just, okay. I wasn't impressed by it all that much. I came across it in like the $5 bin at Walmart, picked it up on DVD, gave it a spin, and was like, wow, what was I thinking? I love this movie now. So that was one I would say, for me, it needed two looks, and now I've seen it 4 or 5 times. I just absolutely love the movie. How about you?
Well, I can't think of one that I didn't like at first and then learned to love, but I can think of a movie that you need to watch more than once.
Okay.
Memento.
Yes.
The first time I watched it, I loved it, but I didn't love it nearly as much as I loved it after the second time I watched it.
And that's obviously because of the whole plot with him not being able to remember. There's probably a lot when you watch it the second time
you catch way more. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, you really do. That movie's amazing. It's so creative in its storytelling technique.
Yeah, the exciting thing is I've only seen it one time. So the
really?
Second, yeah, the second time I'm in for a real treat, according to Matt Kay here.
Yes, yes. You
and it's one,
see that.
And it's one that I've been wanting to check out for a long time for a second time.
I'm going to own that movie very shortly.
Yeah, same here. All right, so what do you got there, Matt?
My questions were not written in by anybody, but...
No, that's fine. And also, so you know, we do not know each other's questions.
No.
So this is the first time I'm hearing this question. I'm all ears.
Well, mine are a little shallow, perhaps, but...
Yeah, they're supposed to be.
I got a couple that are pretty good, but...
Okay.
Here's one. What food and drink do you typically order at the movies, Rye?
Good question, Matt. I overall am either, I'm very standard. I'm popcorn and soda guy.
Popcorn is, okay, Coke or Sprite or?
Sprite.
All right. No caffeine for rye.
Yeah, Sprite, popcorn. I almost never go candy.
Maybe that has something to do with my panic attacks.
Yeah. Maybe a little too hyper?
Yeah, because I'll tell you what I always order.
Hold on 1 second.
Okay, go.
When I do the popcorn, I actually, because when I'm going to the theater consecutive days in a row, I don't go every single time popcorn and soda. There's a lot of times, if it's a very early matinee, I sneak coffee in. I shouldn't say sneaking in, but there's some theaters, they just let you come in with a coffee. So a lot of times, if it's a Saturday morning and I'm catching a movie, I love to go get like a bagel and a coffee, finish the bagel, and then still have, you know, good amount of coffee left, and they'll let me walk into the movie theater, and I'll sip on my coffee, and I'll watch a movie. I love doing that. If it's an evening, and it's before I'm going to dinner, like a small popcorn and a soda does me just fine. Heavy on the salt, heavy on the butter.
Yeah.
What do you like?
I like Twizzlers.
Ooh, one of my old favorites.
I'm a huge Twizzler guy.
See, I'm not too big into the sweets, but when I was a kid, I loved Twizzlers at the movies. I think it had to go hand in hand.
Yeah,
it was probably my favorite candy.
Coca-Cola all the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and or Pepsi, whatever the cola is.
Yeah, but not diet you're talking.
No
diet.
You
want the regular.
Yes. Full-flavored for me, and popcorn, too.
Yeah.
And I like to put the cheese flavor on the popcorn myself.
How about the snow cap?
Snow cap?
What, yeah, the candy? With the chocolate with the little white snow caps?
Never got down with that.
No?
No.
There is a little cult movement that likes to actually pour the snow caps in the popcorn. I've heard this numerous times, not just one person. Many people say they take the snow caps and sprinkle them all over the popcorn, and then they have chocolate snow caps with their popcorn. I think it sounds terrible.
I don't know. I've had chocolate and popcorn. It's actually pretty good. But yeah. I've never had the snow caps in the popcorn.
Yeah.
I'll have to try that.
I don't know about how that would be. But for me, popcorn and soda. Matt sounds like a Twizzler guy.
Yeah.
Plus the hard soda. No diet with this guy.
Yes. Toothaches and panic attacks, people.
Yeah.
You should take a page out of Rye's book on this one.
All right. Here's a question for you. This is on my own, asking Matt. Since we went over scary movies and scary villains the last 2 weeks, what is your favorite Halloween scene in a movie that is not from a horror film?
My favorite
example, a costume party or a trick-or-treat scene.
It's not from a horror movie.
Yeah. Now, because I came up with this question, I have a quick answer myself. If you need time, I can fill in the dead air here.
Yeah,
while you're
go
thinking.
Ahead. Let me think for a second. Go ahead.
I had two that had popped into my mind. One was the costume party in Karate Kid.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. He dresses as the shower.
Yeah,
and you got the wild chicken who hits Danielson in the head with the egg and really changes the course of history as far as the Karate Kid universe is concerned, because he has to go into the bathroom to wash off the egg, and of course then irritates Johnny as he soaks him while Johnny's rolling a joint in the stall.
Yep. And when I was little, I never understood what he was doing in there.
Yeah, rolling a joint.
Yes, now I know, of course.
Yeah. I don't know how Sensei would feel about knowing his students are getting high at costume parties.
He took the brown blotter back in Vietnam. You know,
yeah.
he was a vet.
He was.
Let's see. Okay, my favorite Halloween scene, I'm going with, having no time to think, really, I'm just saying what popped into my head.
Sure.
Nightmare Before Christmas, the Halloween song in the beginning. This is Halloween. This always, I don't know, man. For me, that sort of defined the holiday and really elevated it to the status it deserved to be.
Yeah.
You know, I love Halloween. It's my favorite holiday. And, celebrating the autumn's solstice. Is it a solstice or whatever? Equinox?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I believe it's an equinox. Sure.
The harvest, whatever.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic holiday, folks.
There's another scene in E.T., the extraterrestrial.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Where they dress up. And do they not see Yoda? Or I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen the film. But aren't they trick-or-treating? I thought maybe E.T. sees somebody dressed as Yoda.
Yeah, and there's a moment because they both look alike and they're both George Lucas characters. And
Yeah, good stuff. What do you got for me, Matt?
Okay, my next question is, what critic or site, do you trust the most?
Very good question. I go with Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes is good.
It's excellent because it's taking all the critics around the country, pulling them together, and then giving you an average vote of what the score is.
Yeah, the hive mind.
Yeah. Overall, Rotten Tomatoes, I used to love growing up here in Chicago. Ebert. Siskel and Ebert. We're just fantastic. And I love Ebert, and I even liked Ebert and Roper. Since then, obviously, Ebert, unfortunately, has run into medical problems and has gone off the show. He still writes, and I still read some, you know, most of his reviews. But I, overall, is the last, like, 5 years, I think going to Rotten Tomatoes and checking out what the overall score is a great indicator of the
I think so, too. Wikipedia even quotes them, and we did that a lot in our first show, and Rotten Tomatoes is probably the industry standard.
Yeah. I subscribe to Entertainment Weekly, and they have two reviewers there, Lisa Schwartzbaum and Ian Gleiberman, who do an excellent job. I usually agree with pretty much their reviews, so I'd like to give them a shout-out also. Entertainment Weekly seems very, you know, serious with their reviews and are pretty spot-on, I think. So.
Yeah, I like the Onion's reviews, too, the AV Club.
Yeah. My buddy at work, Will Allison, used to always send me their reviews and tell me how, you know, Onion, obviously, a comical, you know, newspaper, but their movie reviews are not that. They're very serious. And,
yeah. This is a serious section in the paper.
Yeah, good question there. All right, Matt, I got a question for you.
Shoot.
All right. Name an actor or actress that you absolutely can't stand, and why?
Let's see. An actor or an actress I absolutely can't stand. I don't know why Rosie Perez is popping into my head.
Wow. That's why, because I can't stand her either.
I really, you know, it seems to me like she's got absolutely no talent. Her voice is tremendously annoying.
Very annoying. Very annoying.
And I think really that's her whole shtick, too, is her voice. Although, she wasn't horrible in White Men Can't Jump. That's probably her best role.
Yeah.
And she did appear topless in the movie, which is always, well, in this case, it was a pretty good thing.
A plus.
Yeah, that was a plus for her. In general, though, I can't stand her.
I guess we're blessed in the sense that she never became too big of a star, because I can't actually, after White Men Can't Jump, I can't recall too many movies that she's in. I know
she's done
pops
a lot of
up,
TV here.
Yeah,
and, there.
And she'll pop up every once in a while. I'm like, oh God, Rosie Perez, I can't stand her.
Yeah. How about you?
For me, I have a big hang up on Nick Cage.
Yeah.
I love the guy in a couple of roles. You know, Leaving Las Vegas.
Awesome.
And
he's hit or miss.
But overall from
Raising Arizona?
Yeah, good. I mean, some of his earlier stuff, you know, was pretty good. But when he gets to, like, Snake Eyes and he's got a ton of them, those
The
Bangkok
Rock.
Nights. I mean, there's some of them. I can't remember them. He's got Next. Just Next.
Knowing.
Yeah, Knowing. And it's constantly seems like a total actor that's just trying to cash in on the paycheck. His hair is just terrible. It's a different piece on him every single time. Very fake, and just I just can't stand Nick Cage in most of his later roles for like the last, like, I'd say 10 years, outside of The Weatherman.
Ghost Rider sucked.
Oh yeah, that's another one. I remember seeing it and thinking, oh, I wasn't interested in the movie, and then you put Nick Cage in there, it's a double negative for me. I was staying far away from that crapper.
I wouldn't say I can't stand him, but I can see where you're going with this.
Yeah. So there you go with my worst actress.
Well, mine is actually, my next one is, who's your favorite actor or actress?
Oh, okay. Good question. Stays in the same spirit here. I would probably say, I'll just pick one from both sides, and I have a lot of favorites. Actress, I would probably say Kate Winslet.
Nice.
Love everything that she's in. And just versatile. It, you know, so many times I watch movies and steal a line here from Howard Stern. I heard him interviewing Dustin Hoffman a couple weeks ago, and he said to him, you know, when I watch movies, I realize there's really only about 10 or 15 people in the world that can act as a profession, and all the rest are just having fun with it. And he was saying that Dustin Hoffman is in that category. And to a degree, I agree with that statement that there's some that are professional actors like a Dustin Hoffman, a Kate Winslet, a Meryl Streep, and then there's a lot of people that are just pretty faces and okay, but I mean they're not can't pull off some of the feats of a Daniel Day-Lewis, who I would mention is my favorite actor off the top of my head, and I have a lot, but I'll say Daniel Day-Lewis, I love watching this guy, and Kate Winslet, I love watching her. My favorite roles as far as the two go, I love Kate Winslet in The Reader, she was good in, but earlier in the year, she was even better in Revolutionary Road, even though she ended up winning the Oscar for The Reader. But I love her in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind,
great
Titanic,
movie.
Iris. I mean, just great movies. And then on the other half, on the male half, Daniel Day-Lewis, obviously just won the Academy Award a couple years ago for There Will Be Blood. And he did My Left Foot, which was great. He's awesome in Gangs of New York.
Yeah.
Last of the Mohicans.
Yeah.
He's an awesome actor. Who do you like?
I'm a huge De Niro fan, dude. And yeah. I know you're not a big De Niro fan.
No, because I do love early De Niro. We touched on Raging Bull, and I remember thinking when I watched the movie how great De Niro was back then.
He gets typecast a lot, but I think he's got a great range. I mean, like, he's really capable of comedy on both ends of the spectrum, both the straight man and the funny guy.
Yeah.
You know? He could do both. Plus, he's capable of being extremely scary.
Yeah.
You know, and Max Cady in Cape Fear is just about the most terrifying character ever.
Yeah, he has a mean streak about him that just strikes you a little.
And talk about a bad theater fearful. Experience. Do you remember that scene where he's smoking the cigar and he sits down right in front of Nick Nolte and his family and he just starts laughing and really loud at the most inappropriate moments of the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's you know, I think De Niro's really got the range. He plays the gangster roles a lot. He's great. I love seeing him in everything.
Yeah.
I love Bobby.
Good old Bobby De Niro. All right, I got another question for you, Matt.
Shoot.
Name one movie that you did not see in the movie theater, missing it on the big screen, that you wish, only one you can pick, that you wish you could go back and see it like on an opening night with all the fans on the big screen.
Oh, wow. That's a damn good question. Well, do you have an answer that you want to go to?
I do not, because I just made this one up off the top of my head.
Okay. Shoot. Let's see. One that I missed that I wish I could go back.
I got one.
Okay. Go ahead. Go.
For me, I missed it, and my friends will think, wow, I can't believe he didn't see that in the theater, because I absolutely loved the movie so much, Braveheart. Did not see it in the theater. I've seen it since then probably, you know, somewhere around 20 times at home.
Yeah,
and I wish I could have went back and watched it and experienced it on the big screen, the battle scenes, just the emotion that William Wallace brought.
I think I got one.
Okay.
I agree with you on Braveheart, by the way. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, mine too.
It's in my top three.
It's in my top three. It's sitting at number three.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd maybe even put it at number two for me.
Yeah.
It's up there. I would say Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Which, of course, I actually technically was in the theater.
Yeah.
In utero. So
we're not born quite yet.
No, but I was born that year, so.
Yeah. Now, I saw Star Wars when they re-released it with the newly special effects right before they were getting ready to go into the new episodes. They came out with all of them.
Yeah, they kind of.
And it was still fun to see on the big screen, especially at that point we had never seen Star Wars and the words come scrolling across a galaxy far, far away. So it was still very fun at the time, but I agree with you. Imagine going back to
77.
Yeah, and knowing what the audience didn't know, that they were about to see some cinema history right there.
Yeah, for sure. All right, I got a question here. This one's a good question.
Okay.
Might take a little thought here. You touched on this earlier, and that's why I was kind of trying to slow you down. What do you think about digital downloads, bootlegs, and the new way we consume media?
Wow. Heavy loaded question there, Matt.
I know it is.
I'll say I always, for one, have been a very big proponent of. Well, let's just say this. I believe that you should pay for the art that you're seeing. That's my big thing. I'm not necessarily saying that paying $10 or $15 or whatever the price is these days is right. It could be terribly overly priced. But I think somewhere down the road, you should pay for the entertainment that you get. That's why I don't like people bootlegging. All you're doing is somewhere down the line is paying the wrong person, which makes no sense at all. Because even if you're getting it for free, somewhere down the line, the person who bootlegged it is making some money off it somehow.
Right.
So,
but the filmmakers still make money off of product placement. And,
yeah, I agree. But I just think that if you're going to watch it, why not at least pay something towards the fact that you're...
What if you watch it and you hate it?
Well, I mean, that was your choice. That's why you listen to Cinema Jaw before you go out to the theater, so that you make an educated guess on the movies that you're about to see.
Great plug, Rye.
Yeah. And also, what we're talking about, the cost of going to the movies, I went twice this weekend, $11 out of pocket for me.
That's it?
That's it. Let me tell you, Kerastotis Theaters, who competes with AMC, you either got AMC or Kerastotis Theaters. For free, you can get involved with their $5 movie club. They send you a card.
I am involved.
I'm involved. And after 2 weeks, the movie's been out, usually 2 weeks. The movie is $5 no matter when you see it, Saturday night, Friday night. It doesn't matter. You go see it for $5. So I saw Capitalism, A Love Story for $5 on the $5 club. And then on Sunday morning, the matinee price was $6 for Where the Wild Things Are. I think I totally got my money's worth. I spent $11. I was entertained for probably roughly 4 hours there. Where else are you going to go spend $11 and get 4 hours worth of entertainment?
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree with that. But I think now here's the rub.
Yeah.
In this day and age, it's impossible to put the genie back in the bottle, you know, that genie being torrents and download sites and what have you. I'm not talking about bootlegs.
Right.
I think it's sort of bad. I do think it's wrong to carry a camcorder into a theater and get a bootleg. That's messed up. But, you know, these digital copies that are out there, music... I mean, this show is focused on movies, so we'll stick with that. But it's certainly a big thing in the music industry, books even, just about any sort of entertainment media.
Yeah.
We're not going to get this genie back into the bottle. And what we're talking about essentially is these Leviathan companies, these behemoths, trying desperately and throwing all kinds of money at litigation and arresting folks on the internet, saying they're going to ban you from ever using the internet again if you download these files. We need to adapt. We need to evolve. Should we pay for it? Yes. Should it be restructured? Yeah. It needs to be restructured from the ground up. I mean, overhauled is more the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. I mean, I do not mind at all. If you were going to do a pay service on the internet, Blockbuster is introducing it now, Netflix, where you can pay and get the download. I'm all for the ease of getting something at your house. Download... accessible, and it should cut down on costs. Just there's no packaging, there's no, you know,
right.
Handling then, going through the whole thing. So it should be much cheaper in the long run.
They need to lower the prices because, you know, when we're talking about file sharing, it's just like when you were a kid and you make mixtapes.
Yeah.
That's bootlegging, technically speaking.
True.
Making mixtapes and downloading these torrents and stuff. Why pay Netflix $10 when you can get the same quality off a torrent that you download for free?
Yeah.
And most people are going to go for the torrent.
Yeah. And another thing that's a little off topic but staying on the topic at the same time is I can't stand people who watch movies on their computer or this whole iPhone and...
BlackBerry.
Yeah, and they think they're going to download this thing to their iPod and watch a movie on this little screen with, you know, no surround sound, and they're missing so much of the experience most of the times of...
I think, yeah, I agree. I don't think you should watch new movies in that format.
Yeah, if it's an old movie and you're doing some jogging, I'm not saying, not, you know, go ahead and knock yourself out and be entertained. But I know there's people, when I was working, they would say, boy, I watched, you know, blah, 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 we downloaded it yesterday. I think, what, you watched it? And they'd tell me they'd watched it on this little, you know, laptop computer, and it's like, well, you're missing, you know... missing out on some of the effects, the idea of seeing it on a little bit larger of a screen with some surround sound and everything.
I've always been a big fan of content over delivery, you know?
Yeah.
Form over function, or maybe function over form, whatever. You know what I'm trying to say. I got some my favorite movies, the first time I ever watched them was on my PSP, because the UMD movies went out of fashion really quick.
Yeah,
and
that did not catch on.
It didn't, but now they're like $5. So I bought a few and was able to watch them, and I got just as lost in the film as I would have at the theater. I truly believe that.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, yeah.
So any other questions? I'm done. I'm tapped out.
I got more, but we can save them.
Okay. We're going to introduce a new segment here, and we're going to hook up another microphone. Let's see. Is that one on, Steve?
Testing, testing. Yeah, we're live here.
All right. We got another mic hooked up. Cinema Jaws exploring new reaches of the universe.
Yeah. We're going to put Steve on the spot.
We're going to put Steve on the spot, but not until we put Matt on the spot. This new game we're going to play is, the idea is basically we're going to come up with the fame name game, if you will. I'm going to give a name of the actor or actress, and within a second, Matt, you just got to go off the top of your head and say the best movie he's been in.
Okay.
Then we'll turn it to Steve Reno. Same actor. So I'll just say the actor. First movie that he's in that comes to your mind.
And that's
it. I'm going to fail at this game.
All right. Here we go. The actor in question. We're just going to Matt first. Kevin Costner.
Waterworld.
Wow, Waterworld. One of his big failures, too, overall.
I liked it.
Reno. Kevin Costner.
I can't even think of a movie he's in.
I was thinking...
No, nothing. I'm bad at names of people. I know what he looks like, and I have no idea what he was in.
Dances with Wolves for me.
He was in that.
He was.
Do I get a point?
He does get a point.
Ring the bell.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to try one more. Harrison Ford.
Star Wars.
Harrison Ford.
Apocalypse Now.
He is, isn't he?
Yeah.
Harrison Ford's in Apocalypse Now?
He's in the beginning. I mean,
small
all right.
Small role, bit part.
Yeah. Ah. We got Harrison Ford who's in Star Wars and Indiana Jones, and Reno goes with Apocalypse Now, a little bit part.
Yeah. A younger version of him.
Yeah. Wow, fantastic.
Was Harrison Ford in American Graffiti?
He was in American Graffiti also. Yeah. You want to give me a...
Mackenzie Phillips.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
He was the bad guy from out of town.
Yeah, sort of like the bad boy in the car driving around with that cowboy hat.
Yeah.
Stealing the girlfriends and...
Yeah. I haven't seen that movie in... Geez,
it's a good movie.
Yeah, I was a little kid last time I saw that.
Yeah. Good film. You got an actor you want to quiz me on?
Okay. Just randomly?
Yeah,
Chris
please.
Farley.
Boy, Chris Farley, I got to go with... I know the movie I want to say, and the name escapes me right now. It's Fat Guy in a Little Jacket.
Tommy Boy.
Tommy Boy.
That's really the... Yeah, that's the best movie he was in. That's pretty easy.
Yeah. Give me one more. One more.
All right. Well, you got to throw one to Reno.
Yeah, yeah. So give
that was the only one he was in.
Give it a big name actor so that Reno can play along,
too. All right, big name actor. Tom Hanks.
Oh.
Wow. Easy. I'll say big.
Man, there are so many good movies with him in. Apollo 13.
There we go.
Awesome.
Nobody mentioned Forrest Gump, which I thought fantastic
movie. I would say for me, what was the Survivor one?
Ooh, Castaway.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
It's Tom Hanks the whole time.
It is.
Just Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And a volleyball.
Yeah. And when the volleyball goes sailing away, I remember being choked up.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Wilson!
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
That's the sign of a good actor.
For sure.
All right. So that does that segment as far as we go. The fame name game. That brings us to DVD reviews.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. DVD reviews. Matt, I know you saw something very interesting over the week that you've been dying to tell us about.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I saw the movie Push.
Okay.
Decent.
Decent.
Decent. I give it a B.
Okay.
Maybe a B minus.
Probably a B minus for a decent.
Yeah, B minus.
Yeah.
Maybe even a C plus. It's right in that.
Oh, it's, wow. It's dropping steadily here.
It's right up
there.
Do
I hear
cusp.
A C?
No. It's C plus to a B minus. It's right in between.
Okay. Now, I think the girl who's in it is...
It's Dakota Fanning.
Yes, it is Dakota Fanning. Right. Okay.
Yeah, and this goes back to sort of what we were talking about earlier.
And also, before you go too far into it, we had an email. I forget who. Neil somebody or other had wrote into us that you had absolutely spoiled Zombieland and to watch Matt on his spoilers. So go into the movie, but don't spoil the film, Matt.
I won't spoil the film.
Okay.
But I will say this. Okay, so Dakota Fanning is you know, here's one of these child actors. We sort of touched on this before, who's trying to act like an adult. And I think that it's maybe it's poor writing or something, but they're trying to cast her in this like Lolita sort of thing, you know.
Okay.
And it, I didn't, you know, like Natalie Portman in The Professional, I believed that
it works.
Yeah. And even some of her subsequent roles, like in Beautiful Girls, which I mentioned earlier, she had that same like I'm young but I am an old soul, and therefore even though I'm way underage, you can believe her as a love interest.
Yeah.
Even though it's creepy.
Yeah.
Dakota Fanning in a way too short skirt with boots way too high, and it was just like,
Not good.
Not good.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I think that she sort of annoys me a little bit, even though I think she's a really good actress.
Yeah, she is a good actress, but I agree. Maybe they've pushed her down our throats too much.
Yeah.
So now I'm a little annoyed by her already, too. I agree.
I was annoyed by her in this movie, even though she stole a few of the scenes. So here's the premise without spoiling.
Because the film, I believe, has some type of something to do with like the supernormal or something, right? It, at least from the box. I have not seen the film yet.
No. Okay. So it's not supernormal. It's very natural, but it's not even supernatural. It's paranormal, maybe.
Okay.
At best. It's about psychic abilities. And so there's a government agency, they're called the Division, and they're chasing these rogue psychic agents. And you have watchers who obviously have clairvoyance, pushers who can put thoughts into your head, who are kind of like psychic con artists.
Hence the title, Push.
Yes, indeed. Because, I'm not going to do a spoiler. And then you have movers who are telekinetic, and then there's sniffers, bleeders, shadows, and all kinds of other little special powers, and it's very interesting. There's some really cool special effects in this movie with people telekinetically controlling guns while they're fist fighting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's very John Woo.
Yeah.
At least trying to be very John Woo. I can't remember the director's name, but he's a Scottish guy. And it was shot in Hong Kong, beautifully shot. There was some amazing special effects. Amazing.
This is turning into a BB plus all of a sudden, the way you're describing this movie.
This is why it got
a lower grade. Oh, okay.
These are the pros. I'll get to the cons. You know, everybody has two guns, not one. That's how you know it's a kung fu movie. But here are the cons. Dakota Fanning, although she steals a lot of the scenes, like I mentioned, she just annoys the crap out of me. The main love interest, the adult female, I can't even remember the actress's name, was utterly forgettable, as is the male lead.
Just terrible.
They suck.
Yeah.
The villain is ho-hum.
Yeah.
The plot has so many holes like Swiss cheese.
All right, now we're getting back down to the C-plus range.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so if he's psychic, why is he going into this building if he knows that this is going
to
happen?
Yeah,
you know?
Once you start messing with that psychic ability, it's tough to even get a good plot going then.
It is. You have to suspend disbelief a little bit, but if I can think of it, then it takes me out of that suspension.
Right.
And it bothers me. Like, that's just lazy writing or poor writing. So this is a good movie if you want to have some fun and see a good action piece. It's not terribly challenging in the thought department. And as a skeptic, I did not like the fact that they threw in this bullshit little thing on the bonus features. And I'm going to say the word beat bullshit.
Yeah.
Because with a guy who's ex-special ops, like legitimate ex-government guy, talking about psychic powers and how they're real. They're not real. It's a bunch of hooey.
So overall, a C+, you'd slightly recommend if you're in it sounds like you want to have some fun. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's about it.
Eh.
Okay.
It's an eh. Like, if it's on cable and you're bored late one night and there's nothing else on, yeah, sit down and watch it. You're not gonna wish you were dead or anything.
Well, this is really unfortunate for the listeners because I'm not giving them much on my DVD review either. This was The Proposal with Sandra Bullock and Ryan Reynolds. And I've come to the realization that I just don't think that Sandra Bullock is all that likable.
Yeah, she sucks.
Yeah. And
Miss Congeniality.
The story, the setup of the story, I should say, is just laughable. I don't know if you're familiar with
familiar
the proposal,
with it somewhat.
But
yeah.
Basically, she ends up being a Canadian who is going to get deported. She's an editor in New York, and they give her this news that she's going to be deported. And in walks her assistant, who just hates her. And basically, right in the spot, says that, hey, we're getting married, and that's why this is going to be legal, and I can stay in the country. He goes along with it because he thinks this is his way up the ladder of becoming an editor also. And from there, they jump into, like, the first order of business is introducing her to his family because he was going there just so happens that weekend to Alaska.
Oh, that's convenient.
Yeah, and he's going to introduce his new fiance. And herein lies all the comedy. Well, what's supposed to be the comedy, you got this, you know, editor from New York, snotty editor from New York, going to Alaska and hanging out in the countryside with his family. It is just sort of embarrassing for Sandra Bullock. Betty White is in there as a supporting role. And your buddy, Coach Craig T. Nelson, is in there.
Yeah.
He plays Ryan Reynolds' dad. And I thought about you when I was watching it.
Because I couldn't come up with that name.
I thought, well, maybe Matt will like it for Craig T. Nelson.
I do like him. I love Betty White, too. How's she in it?
She's just okay. You know, she plays like that sort of like odd quotated grandmother who says like odd things, you know, at the inappropriate time. And I guess it's every once in a while you get a laugh out of that, but for the most part it's that forced like old lady humor that we're used to in these romantic comedies.
I still watch Golden Girls here and there.
Yeah, Golden Girls is very good.
Very good TV right there.
Yeah. And Coach, very good.
Indeed.
Good TV, but I don't know, they did not translate well into this movie. The other thing too was that the scenes they thought were very funny in Alaska with, you know, this goofy scene with a bird and Sandra Bullock is just terrible. And also, they could have explored more about Sandra Bullock's character because they don't really ever go into why. Of course, I'm not spoiling the movie. We know they end up going to really fall in love, obviously.
Get out. Sense.
Yeah. So I'm not spoiling it at all.
But I had no clue, right? You just spoiled the whole thing for
but
me.
But the whole thing is they don't even explain or explore anything into Sandra Bullock's character on why all of a sudden he went from hating her to, oh, wow, yeah, I think we really can get married. Just a terrible movie. I think what we have here is a crapper, The Proposal. Also coming out this Tuesday, I think it's another crapper. I haven't seen it myself, Transformers 2.
I am willing to give that one a chance.
Yeah, that comes out today. By the time you listen to this, it'll be out. So maybe you want to go Transformer 2's over the two we just listed.
We go to Transformers 2 instead.
And I propose staying away from The Proposal. That brings us to our last segment.
Rise Hidden Gem.
Ooh, the hidden gem. This week I'm offering a movie that's been out for a long time out on DVD. It's called Elegy. It stars Ben Kingsley. You like Ben Kingsley?
I do.
Yeah, when he's given the right role, he's an excellent actor. It's Ben Kingsley, Penelope Cruz. And Kingsley plays like the older guy. He's like a professor.
He was Gandhi.
He was Gandhi, and he won the Academy Award for playing Gandhi.
Well, deservedly so.
Yes. So he plays like the older professor guy that's like afraid of ever hunkering down and being in a relationship. And so his whole life he sort of plays the field, if you will, and has sort of always been afraid of getting into a relationship. And here comes Penelope Cruz, who's a student of his at one of his lectures, and just totally like sort of sweeps him off his feet. And right away it could go into the cliche of, oh, it's the older guy, professor, likes the younger girl. But the movie instead almost talks about it being cliche. And what makes it work is how serious in which they address the subject matter. A, you got a guy who doesn't want to commit to relationships, and then B, really falling in love with the person after getting to know her. Yeah, he likes her for her looks right away, but they get into a relationship and really gets to know her. And then sort of reflects on his whole life is, did he miss out on something? Because he was always afraid to get involved in a relationship to really get to know someone. You know, he was always only letting someone get so deep with him throughout this whole.
So he's coming out of his shell.
Yeah, and now he's older, and it's almost like a sad look, and a reflective look on his life, because he realizes that he might have passed on that whole idea of growing older with someone. And it's very interesting and a deep subject matter that we don't usually see. A lot of times they like to just sort of skim the surface of a lot of subject matters in movies, and this one really digs deep into it. Great acting by both Ben Kingsley and Penelope Cruz. And also in the movie is Dennis Hopper, who plays Kingsley's like best friend that he goes sees and has coffee. And he actually does a really good role in like a serious role, always sort of like talking and bouncing ideas off.
Does he say the word man?
He does not say it.
All right, then I'm...
And also Patricia Clarkson, who's pretty good, who plays sort of like Kingsley's, what would you say? He's been having an affair with her character for like 20 years, and they don't go any deeper than...
His booty call?
Yeah, exactly. Also, Peter Sarsgaard, who we had mentioned earlier in the program in the education, plays Kingsley's son, who he also sort of pushed away because he's always scared of relationships. And then on top of that, the movie sort of takes a twist with Penelope Cruz's character. That's sort of a sad twist and sort of double ups on itself. And you really realize how emotionally attached he was to her character. Hmm. And just a very strong performance and a strong movie that I think a lot of people skipped. And I
believe haven't even heard of it, dude.
This is why it's a hidden gem. I think a lot of people have not heard of it, and I think a lot of people have walked by it when they have seen it at the video store. Might not be on the new release wall anymore. You might still find a copy out there. They like to keep them out there, hanging out there for a good 6 months to a year.
I will put it on the queue.
Yeah, Elegy.
All right.
So there's the hidden gem, and I think that about wraps up.
Well, we skipped 6 degrees, but you know what? Let's
I got 6 degrees right here. I forgot. It's an email in hand.
All right, let's do it.
All right. This is from J-Star from Bucktown.
J-Star, huh?
Yeah. Okay. J-Star from Bucktown writes in, Matt, connect John C. Reilly to Hilary Swank, who is in the upcoming movie Amelia. John C. Reilly, think about it here for a second.
Yeah.
Hilary Swank. And while he thinks about it, let me remind everybody that CinemaJaw.com is up and running. That is CinemaJaw, CinemaJaw, CinemaJaw.com. You can check out all our episodes there and leave us comments, and we will read them on air. Matt has given me a thumbs up.
Yeah, I got it. And also, I want to say CinemaJaw is going to be changing and evolving in the next few weeks, so do keep an eye on it. The website, CinemaJaw.com.
Very exciting stuff's happening here.
Okay, so...
How many moves, Matt? How many moves?
Swank to Reilly, I think I got it in 4.
Okay.
All right, Swank was in Million Dollar Baby with Morgan Freeman, who was in Bucket List with Jack Nicholson, who's in The Departed with Mark Wahlberg, who is in Boogie Nights with John C. Reilly. Is that 4 or was that 5?
That was well done.
Well, whatever. Yeah, that was less than 6.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be difficult. I don't think about him. You know, I just bring him in, and that was shocking. I couldn't think of what John C. Reilly was.
You know, the more we talk about movies, actually, I'm getting a little better at this.
Yeah. And you're already good, so I can't imagine how good you're going to get.
It's scary. Superhuman levels.
Yeah.
I have the force. All right, so I think that just about wraps us up this week for CinemaJaw. Next week, I think we're going to try to have our first guest.
Yeah. I mean, this week we tried Steve Reno, who came in very, very strong with his suggestions on movies that the famous actors have been in.
Absolutely. Thank you to Steve. And thank you to the Original Mothers for hosting CinemaJaw. Thanks to Rye.
Thanks, Matt.
And we'll see you guys next week.
Adios.